It is. So we, you know, we'll definitely be working with, you know, Malcolm X. What we're trying to do is not treat it differently, but we did get some feedback that, you know, the stations really do run Malcolm X quite a lot.
Yes.
And, you know, they do run more or less the same speeches. There's three power speeches of Malcolm's that they run, but the archives knows about the secret speeches and the secret recordings that don't get a lot of airplay. And also, like I was talking about with the June Jordan quote, where she actually says it's because of the way Malcolm X spoke and the way he used the English language that made her a poet. We're calling the hour Malcolm X a voice of influence rather than just the Ballad of the Bullet speech. So we'll be doing a little bit of homework with that. We have Gerald Horn and Charles Jones, who are academics, will be joining us with the Black Panther Party. In the Malcolm X Hour, we have a call to Angela Davis, who might be joining us. And then the last subject matter we want to talk about is science fiction, which we've always wanted to do, never really could figure it out, never could really figure out how to sell it, how to make it a premium, what the content would be. Well, the answer sort of came to us. In New York City, WBAI, Jim Freund has been doing a program, science fiction program, for 40 years, and a black queer writer, science fiction writer named Samuel R. Delaney, did a broadcast of his famous story, The Star Pit, almost 40 years ago to the day of our broadcast. So they did a 40th anniversary live reading on South Seaport and actually got New York Times press from it, because it included Jim Freund and Samuel R. Delaney himself as one of the readers. Samuel R. Delaney has actually written an essay about the experience of his work being broadcast 40 years ago, being a black queer writer. So it has a lot of flavor in terms of what it really means, the diversity within science fiction I could never really wrap myself around anyway. So we have some of the answers there, and Jim Freund and Samuel Delaney will be with us to run the show that hour.
This is Teresa. May I suggest that all of these things that you're telling me, like right now, that you send an email to the program director and say, cut these up and put them in the mailboxes so the programmers can mention them on the air. Like Queer Voices on Monday nights on KPFT can say, oh, by the way, on what's the date of our event?
Tuesday the 27th.
On Tuesday, the 27th of November, we expect to have, an airing of some conversations of such and such. And if they get this enough with enough notice, they can actually talk about this prior to the event. So their listeners are not only they're educated in advance as to who they're going to be listening to. I mean, the one about the women. That could be mentioned on several. And, you know, if you're saying, we're hoping to have Angela Davis come on,
mm-hmm.
I think that I can think of about five or six programs that I would like them saying a week in advance, we hope to have Angela Davis on or da-da-da, you know, something
right.
Like that. What I'd like to suggest, Brian, would be that, you know, whatever the overall press release that we are planning to send to the program directors, right? You know, that go also to each member of this not committee, this support group or whatever it is.
Yes, I get
and
it.
Whatever we are. And that then you all, you know, from your knowledge of the station and your knowledge of the programmers, help us distribute that again,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you people, you know, you can cut some of the stuff up and you can know who... You know, the people that you know or whose programming you know, you can send them some notification and let them know when it's going to happen, because we are going to do that for the program directors. It's just you cannot nag enough.
What is the press release going to be like? Is it only going to be one page, or for the? I mean, I think the program directors need to have a lot of detail. Like some of the things that you're telling us now, but...
Right. Well, they've already gotten that over a week and a half ago. I haven't heard it back from any of them.
And they're going to get...
But they're going to get it over and over again. Mm-hmm. With
but
a
that's
new update.
Not
so,
necessarily going to do that wonderful thing that you're talking about.
Right. So here's right now. The stage it's at now is that the program directors and the general managers have the schedule and of the subject matters and the hosts that have been confirmed, and then they have the to be announced when we don't have a host or a subject matter confirmed, like the Angela Davis. Not confirmed. I don't want anybody to hear that yet. As far as I know, she hasn't even read the email yet.
Like what I'm trying to prove to talk about to our program director is I want cross promotion. I want somebody on Tuesday saying, "Well, listen in on Thursday. I hear so and so is going to be interviewed."
You know how that actually happens is that every single one of us, to the extent that we actually have that knowledge of a particular producer, actually does a one-on-one, you know, mailing or phone call or whatever, more than one, to let them know that. Because whatever is going to happen through whatever other channels there are, that's just one thing. And by the, you know, in order for somebody to actually say something on their show on Thursday at 8:30, mm-hmm. you know, that really requires as much nudging as conceivably possible. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that even the program directors of a lot of these stations actually know the kind of, you know, deep stuff that, like, that you all do as listeners, not to mention, you know, board members, you know? So really, truly, if you go, "Oh, my God, that is completely perfect for Allison," mm-hmm. or George, you know, that then, like, it would be really great if you could do that. So if we can post, right, Brian, on our list, on the conference, whatever it is that we know, you know, whatever is going to everyone else, you know, then you guys, if each one of you could look and parse it and think about who to send it to, that's the very, very best we can do. That would be awesome.
Well, I don't know. I have to be real careful about what I tell programmers to do for fear.
Well, you're not doing, you're suggesting.
True.
You're not telling. And if you can't, then have your ferret send the email.
Well, certainly the program director should give them a good deal of detail as early as possible. So, like, 2 weeks at least, if possible, because some people come in for their show and read their mail then. So if they only have it the day of their show, it's liable that they're not going to get it read.
That's right. That's why I'm trying to influence there to be, you know, more than one avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, you know, we'll do our damnedest to get that stuff out there. And
we appreciate it, let me tell you.
Very exciting. You know as well as we do that, like, you know, it's hard to get that stuff distributed out. I mean, the person who's got a show every third Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the program director might not even know who that person is.
Well, good suggestion. I will do what I can. If you send me as much detail as possible and of what you want me to say, and don't mention Angela Davis' name if you don't.
Right. Don't drop the name yet.
So we can do that, Brian, right?
Yeah. What's happening next is a short program description, mm-hmm. which is what you want. Like in the Malcolm X Hour, it should say this hour features a Malcolm X retrospective with Angela Davis, possibly, or Gerald Horn and Charles Jones join Davey D to talk about the Black Panther legacy. Listen for H.R.A.P. Brown's best speech of the 20th century. So short descriptions like that, which can give the buzz, will be the next thing that happens.
And you guys, of course, you know, all of you who are producers know that we're, you know, busting our asses to try to get that information available so that Brian can tell people what it is.
Right.
Know? And we're here auditing and auditioning and editing, and, you know, that's what we're doing.
It takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
And, well, with a staff of almost no people, I mean, it's not like a radio station with 300 volunteers.
Well, hopefully you have been able to recruit some volunteers to help you with that because it's very exciting work.
Yeah, no, Brian's actually gotten together a very good group of people working on this. We're okay.
And that's all I have to say at the moment. I'm practically hoarse.
Yay,
the smoke in Los Angeles is pretty bad. The staff today really did feel our lungs tightening.
I felt a tremendous heaviness in the air, no matter where you are. But I think Teresa has been kind of pushing this, but I think all five stations, all of us need to do the same thing to get this to. We have a program director now who's kind of like wounded by illness and so on. So we need to deal directly, pretty much, with programmers here, I think.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Don. And actually, that's kind of like it, isn't it? I mean, there's plenty else that's going on. We have the Grammy grant that started. We have the NEA grant that we're finishing. We have wonderful folios that have been posted on our website.
If you haven't looked, people, you've got to look.
We have folios from 1968. We have the very first WBAI folio up. So if you want to know what the first thing was heard in WBAI in 1960, go see it.
Yeah, they're fabulous.
They heard it.
We're kind of thrilled with ourselves, actually.
Yeah. We've just posted the new NEA tapes that have been preserved are in our preservation list now. And now that our, with Pete Caracas's help, let me say something very nice, it's deserving. With the help in building our audio site, we were able to actually load in these audio recordings and link them within our database. Our database is now online, in-house. Nobody cares except Addy and I, but it's a very important thing. And also, I guess in the real sense, it really does mean that when we post the text of a title of a program, we can, in the database, in a catalog sense, we can actually add the field that has the audio link to it, the notice in a folio if it's listed, and a photograph if we have something. So we're able to actually marry all of the elements about a specific recording together.
And something we've been wanting to, how long?
10 years.
So we're finally there. So it's a big deal. It's a big step for us. Even though, it can be prettier, but it's there.
Archive database people would be very excited about it.
That's right.
I'm sorry. This is Bonnie. I'm sorry. I have another meeting starting upstairs.
Oh, good. Then let's finish this one and let me go home.
Well, maybe you guys should continue on. There was another item or two on there, but I can't really do much about it. They kind of ran into each other here.
Well, Sherna's item, she's not here, so let's drop that.
I think we might hold that for the next time.
So I just want to say about the Sherna thing about how she said we didn't show up at something whatever. So anyway, I know that she's going to show up at this Oral History Association meeting here in Oakland. And so if she doesn't, pay attention to me and push the archive stuff, I'm going to be,
Well, that is a very, I hope we can reach an understanding on that of who's going to keep some sort of calendar. Because I just
realized, that would be great. Create a calendar, yes.
I just realized, we had a very big presence at the James Olmos Latino Family and Book Festival in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
One of our stations was the home sponsor of it.
Yeah.
And we had a town hall meeting there on immigration, and we had a session on how people can get programs on KPFT. And we also had a booth.
Gosh, that's wonderful.
And it just occurred to me when I saw Sherna's notation that I should have had lots of catalogs for the archives there.
Well, that's so right. So that's something that's great. So, hi, Mary. So that's a great thing for the committee to do, isn't it, Brian?
Yes.
I mean, that's perfect. That's wonderful.
Well, do we have a lot of catalogs? Do we have extra catalogs?
Yes.
Yes. They're from 2005, but they
But they're
they work.
Magnificent.
Well,
they've got a lot of highlights.
You know, let me say, no offense, but when I ask about them at the station, I'm kind of dismissed as if they're all gone, and I don't know whether they're really all gone or whether they don't know where they are.
Can we send a box to everyone, Brian?
Again, yes.
I'm new.
Yeah, I was going to say, here's the thing. When we sent the boxes back in 2005, I know KPFT put them out, and that's the only station that I know put them out. And it's a matter of, you know, the GM won't open a box and put something out on the front desk. It's finding out who's the person that we send the box to who will actually get a razor blade, open a box, and put a pile in the front lobby.
Right.
Well, our events / volunteer coordinator is Eddie Garcia.
Indeed.
He handles all of the tabling at events, and I would think that he would appreciate them.
So I guess I'm sorry.
And another question I have, do you go to the, I don't know whether it's called the American Library Association, do you go out to all of those events?
We can't go out to all of anything.
I know,
yeah,
I know.
Right now the finances are I'm not allowed to go anywhere.
I've got a question.
But, hang on a second, Melinda. We are scheduled on a yearly basis to attend two or three conferences. Ordinarily, it's NSCB for sure. Grassroots Radio Conference, we've done a couple times but couldn't afford it the past 2 years. Society of American Archivists, I've gone 2 out of 5 years. And the Association of Recorded Sound Collectors, I've done 2 times. I've just been invited as of yesterday by the Library of Congress to join a workshop on grant writing for the Association of Recorded Sound Collectors in Washington, D.C. in March.
Are they going to pay for it?
Well, of course they're going to pay for it. Yes, actually, they are going to pay for it. Uh-huh. So in March, I'll be at Washington, D.C. for the Split This Rock, Poets Against the War, doing an educational workshop. Library of Congress, ARSC, grant writing, and then on December 19th, there is a educational workshop that I am working on with the Schomburg Center and a James Baldwin event.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any librarians, for example, who would be happy to sit at a booth and pass out information?
Those are the kind of things that would be so fabulous if this group could help. You know, if we could put together a calendar, like maybe we could go back and forth and like everyone add the dates that they know. If everybody goes to somebody who, you know, like a librarian who will be at the American Library Association or who will be at the California Library Association or who will be at the New England Library Association.
What about the Veterans Project? Has anybody ever contacted them about conscientious objectors?
Yes, that's part of this whole DVD and everything.
My husband actually entered a conscientious objector into that. He was one of the local editors.
Wow.
And he did get a conscientious objector from World War II.
That's wonderful.
The man spoke of being beaten up every day of his life for months.
Well, that's part of, there are interviews like that, maybe not as excellent as the one of which you're speaking, but that are on that DVD.
Yeah.
And there are many, many that are part of that radio series.
Because my husband had mentioned that to me. He said it was very important. He was very proud to be able to put that into the archives.
Oh, well, that's great. So, you know, anything that you know is there that we have or that, you know, we should have, that if you could send an email, you know, especially maybe to the group. What do you think, Brian? On the Yahoo groups?
Yeah.
Then we can see that, and then we can act on that. We can have some dialogue back and forth about that. I really think that would be great if somebody in this group or the group as a whole would decide to put together a calendar that has events on it, and then we could see whether we can cover them. We do, at least for the foreseeable future, have these little mini catalogs to be able to distribute, and that would be a really great thing.
If
if at the very least, if we can't afford a booth, if when the librarians meet, they charge for booths, we could ask if they would include our catalog in the packets.
No, that costs even more money. But what you can do is talk to an individual who actually has a table or a booth already,
mm-hmm.
and ask them to include some of our things on their table. The packets cost more than a booth.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about that.
That's too bad, because it's kind of like a little freebie.
Well, that's why it costs so much money. But the thing is, the thing is more like, even if we talk amongst ourselves, okay, Sharon has said why didn't we show up at this event? Well, if we knew Sharon was going to show up at that event, we could have supplied her with things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like right now, I looked up, you know, I'm going to go to the Oral History Association conference, so I look up who's there and I see there's Sharon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can say, hey, Sharon, when you do your session, put these on the table in the back, you know? So if we get it together about those kind of things, we can actually, you know, we can do a lot even without having to pay for entry fees and such.
Has Bonnie left the meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Who's chairing the meeting?
I think it's a free-for-all.
Okay,
it's
well,
done.
I'm gonna chair the meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. On the subject of the calendar, could someone from the archives office start a calendar and just send it out and say, these are the meetings we have, so some people on this listserv could add to it?
Not until December.
That's fine.
You know, nobody's allowed to ask the archives to do anything. But
okay.
The thing is, that's why I'm here. but you know, a thing is, couldn't we put something up in like a Google, what's it called? Google.
Well, we have a listserv. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. So why don't we just put stuff, you know, but the thing is, we want to put something up where people can add stuff.
Maybe. Okay, I'll tell you what. I have a degree in education library science, but I don't work in the field.
Uh-huh.
So I don't keep track of that, and I'm not really technically skilled. Is there someone here who would like to start creating this calendar? Melinda, would you like to maybe just make a stab at it?
Only little minor problem is I'm kind of in the middle of running right now and a few other things. I'm sorry.
That's
and I got a lot of volunteers. Eddie's got me signed up.
The problem is, I think part of the problem is that some of the people on this committee don't have the, we're not professionals in the field, so we don't understand, you know, the significance of the oral history, whatever.
Yeah, but whatever you know. And so if we just put up a flat file, okay, and if anybody puts something up in any, just in a letter, let's just
okay, well,
do it
what
that
I would
way.
Like, okay,
and wait,
what
January,
I,
February, March, and just put whatever you know.
Well, at this point, I know nothing without a lot of research. I tell you what, I will send out an email, and if Maybe Sherna will maintain it.
Actually, we know that Sherna, and especially since she's not here, mm-hmm. we know that Sherna has a lot of those dates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I will ask Sherna. I will send a letter to the group and ask Sherna if she will do it.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
And then we'll take it from if that doesn't work. But, you know, the thing is, we're not asking Sherna to have the final answer. We're just asking for whatever she knows, and we'll all add.
Yes.
Because Brian and I can definitely add piece by piece the broadcasting stuff, right?
Right. Brian? And the OCLC.
And whatever we
did
have
that
to...
one.
Right.
And also the very, very large book fairs, you know, the Los Angeles Times book fair.
Exactly.
KPFK usually has. I've worked that booth there, and it's enormous. The biggest names in publishing, the big authors are there. Workshops, and again, even if we couldn't afford a booth there, there are sympathetic folks in the publishing industry that are very fascinated by
exactly.
That.
So that's what I'm thinking is if every committee member here, or not committee member, has,
yeah.
you know, a box at home the way I do,
yeah.
the catalogs, you know, you can bring a handful of them over to someone's house.
You know, I'm going to walk upstairs to the
Great.
Archives.
Great.
Because I'll be there. I'm there during, you know, we're in fund drives. And so I'm going to walk upstairs someday and put in an order for a box of that.
Great.
And I'll also drop some off at PD's office. And, you know, Sue Welsh is very effective in outreach, community outreach at KPFK. So I think I'll once again sit down with Sue and reiterate the importance of promoting the archives whenever she's out in the community.
Right. That's terrific.
Okay. Well, Don, you are secretary, and I would like you to make a notation. Who is going to send the box of catalogs to Eddie Garcia at KPFT?
Let me write an email to Sean Dallas.
Okay.
And I will get him to send a box. Eddie Garcia, right?
Yes.
Perfect.
For outreach events. Okay.
Okay.
And Don can put down that I will send a notation to Sherna and also to the archives. Are there any other comments on this subject? Hearing none, we'll now go to the issue that I brought up and temporarily has gone out of my head. Subject was, I want to know if there is a specific procedure for people submitting things to archives. Because, for example, and here's something, Charlie Clements, who is the CEO, president of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, is a medical doctor. He's written a book. He was served in Vietnam. He was asked to bomb, I guess he was in the Air Force. He was asked to do something in Cambodia. He refused. They put him in a psychiatric hospital and declared that he was psychiatrically unfit.
That's fine.
And John Basil of our station taped an interview with him, and this came out, and they aired it. How do we get that to archives? In what format? Who's making sure that those kinds of interviews, because Charlie Clements could be President of the United States or the Secretary of State, and I'm wondering, are we systematically submitting things to archives so that they're preserved as well as some of the things that happened 30 years ago? Because I'm talking to programmers that are interviewing wonderful people, and I'm wondering if this material is getting to the archives. So what are we doing about that?
Ooh, that's a biggie. But let me see if I can start with a couple things, and I'm going to ask Addy to jump in. What we're able to do right now, which is sort of what we should be duplicating for each of the five stations, but we're doing it with KPFK. We've been doing it for over a year of recording them 24/7 in archival quality bitrate and storing it onto a server. So we have everything of KPFK for the cherry picking later when whoever becomes president. The other stations, however, and the individual programmers, we don't have a systematic way to gather materials. We don't receive materials from program directors, and we rarely get materials from programmers themselves. It does happen. You know, I think Ernesto has called me about making sure some stuff got in the archives and is sent to CDs. And that's what I ask for. That's what I ask for when people make the suggestion. And a few others, but certainly not in what I would call systematic. But the other part of that, Teresa, is that ownership deal. Some producers think that they own the material and that we don't have rights to it. Addie, maybe now is a good time for you to jump in, because it's a little more complicated than that. But the Pacifica Foundation has not set policy to allow the archives to ask for materials in the proper way, in a systematic way, or vice versa. Programmers don't know when they give materials to the archives what happens next.
Well, could you work something? Could you sit down with our program, national program director or coordinator, and develop that policy?
Yes. That can be developed. It will not happen swiftly.
Mm-hmm. Well, can we do it sometime in the near future? Can we do it specifically? Because I'm very disappointed that KPFK is being assisted, but we have people.
But KPFK being assisted isn't the same thing as things being acquired by the archives. It's not the same thing. It's just that all their programming is being copied and digitized. It's not the same thing.
Well,
the thing about actually curating, the thing about actually having an acquisition policy, we have not had an acquisition policy since the organization blew itself apart in 1999. Okay? And the thing is that...
Well, why can't we use the policy that we had then?
Because first of all, it was not a good policy. And second of all, it just wasn't very good policy. And second, it had to do with basically whatever, it was different for each station, and it was built upon, it had to do with what people wanted at each station. We can do an acquisition policy. The thing that's holding up an actual acquisition policy being written up, you know, in terms of as a priority, is that there are a lot of issues now that the National Board has been trying to, are you right about saying the National Board? National Organization has been trying to deal with, including the National Board, about what actually the ownership and copyright agreements would be with producers, okay?
Yeah.
And so actually building an acquisition policy has been considered contingent upon those decisions being made. But be that true or not, what we need is a little bit of stability in the organization as a whole and a little bit of time to be able to develop a policy. And then once there is a policy, actually having that policy be followed is another big issue.
Mm-hmm.
If we start, in a way we've been blessed by not getting material that we really would really desperately want to have in, because we've had no staff, we have no facility, we have no space, okay? So if we start really instituting an acquisition policy that's going to give us materials, we're going to have to make many decisions about how that material is going to be preserved, in what format it's going to be preserved, and what the rights issues are. So it's a big, huge can of worms. So, yes.
I don't want to interrupt, just when you're finished.
So the thing is, you know, it's possible for us to be able to let me tell you what the old policy was, okay, because maybe this can be informative. The old policy was that at some stations, at some times, the program director would make decisions about what programs the organization might really want to keep, and then they would submit them to the archives, and there was a form, and we've got the form, you know, okay? But the those programs would be cleared only for broadcast, not for any other kind of use. Okay, broadcast and obviously scholarly study or one-off copies, okay? But other than that, you know, it wasn't an issue when things actually came into the archives. So either a producer unto themselves decided that something should go to the archives, and whoever was on the receiving end of the archives agreed that that should happen, and they would spend the money that it would cost to be able to catalog and to preserve that tape, okay? Or else the program director at a station or a department head at a station would make that decision, would come. So actually our collection is, you know, because we did not ever have a really rational collection policy, is very strange, you know? But that's what it is. Then when you know, the troubles happened, people didn't trust the archives enough to send anything, so it became not an issue.
Well, it's not a matter right now of not trusting the archives. at KPFT, we have people that don't know the proper procedure. And you know, if I want to, if you know, if we have an interview, if Wally James does an interview, and he has about 50 tapes, CDs, of people that he has interviewed, if I want to hear a copy of it, I have to contact him individually. And I'm sure that he would want to know, he would want to say, I want to interview you, and I want you to sign this paperwork before you're interviewed. You know, people want to do the right thing.
Well, that's what we all have to decide. We have to figure out, you know, what kind of space we're going to have, physical space and digital space, you know, what kind of duplication there'll be, what kind of format is required, what kind of metadata is required, and we have to have the staff to be able to process that material and to catalog it correctly. Right now we don't have that. So this is, you know, one of the huge goals of the archive, is to be able to get to that point.
Well, sounds like you maybe need to be working with technology committee on that. And
could
also
absolutely.
And also
absolutely.
Nathan,
could I be recognized at
more.
Some point, Teresa?
Okay.
Absolutely. We are awaiting a report from the technology committee, and I don't know what Nathan Moore is doing.
Okay, I would like to hear Michael Woodson say something, and then I will recognize Don White.
I'll refer to the wise and sagacious Don, my old roomie, White.
Well, Michael, let me say a few words, and then you jump in. You know, I think it would be very helpful if this working group had some night had Rob Robinson of the Pacifica National Board on, because as many of you know, Rob has taken a leave of absence and is working on some of these very issues, not the technical issues about how archive material will be stored so much, but he's working on licensing and on digital distribution. And some of the issues we're talking about, Rob Robinson and his collective have addressed, and he made an extraordinarily good report to the Pacifica National Board at our last meeting. And one of the objectives of that working group that Rob heads up is to do what Teresa is talking about, making sure that excellent programming doesn't remain kind of hidden in a little pocket of the network, but has the capacity to be distributed widely. Now, I know Charlie Clemens, and he was extraordinary. You know, his book is about El Salvador, and he was in El Salvador as a non-combatant doctor, and that interview would be fascinating. I would love to hear it, because I know him, and I know his history. So I think some night, when we have, like, maybe 30 minutes to spare, we should have Rob Robinson come on and explain what they're doing. And, you know, he's in consultation with Dr. Lessig, who's the premier American expert on licensing to encourage community radio and to reduce the restrictions on the use of materials. What is that called, that licensing? It's called
Creative Commons.
Yes, that's right. Yes, Creative Commons, that's right. I think that is what they were
saying. That is right.
That is right. Thank you. So some of the concern that is being expressed here about good programming remaining isolated in pockets of the network, plus the idea that licensing with producers who don't want to lose total control of their property, they can be mutually beneficial licensing practices where the producer releases it to the archives and still maintains the right to use it herself or himself. There's a lot of stuff that's happening. Addie, I think it was Addie who mentioned that the PNB is working on this issue, and we're at a critical moment right now. We've extended Rob Robinson's work for another month,
to bring some of the loose ends together. And I think it does affect the archives. It does affect all of the issues that are presently being...
May I make a point of clarification?
Yes.
Okay. We're working with him. Okay? So, you know, Rob, if you just want to hear what he's doing and you want to spend a half an hour on any one of these meetings listening to what he's doing at this point, that's totally excellent. In the meantime, we are working with him to try to make this work for the archives. Okay?
Make what work?
The policy they're working on.
Okay.
All right? So you know, like right now, I'm in the midst of a draft here of working with whatever it is that his last thing is that he's working on. So, we're there. What I want to say is, like, we're there with it. Okay?
But we're not aware of that. I know.
I'm telling you. So we're there with it. Okay. So it depends where you all want to jump in. I would counsel that maybe, you know, if we keep working on some, you know, there's two things. One thing is, if you just want to hear what they're doing, it would be great to have them come on and just talk about what they're doing. If we want to step into the next level of where policy is, where the fundamentals which are required for a policy to be developed, then that would be good too. On the other hand, we're trying to work as fast as we can, so by the time we have another meeting, we might be there.
Good.
Okay? So let me just say that the archives is working on behalf of all these issues with everything that the board's working. It's not like separate. It's not separate.
Well, can you give me any time frame of when
No.
When you will have some? Well, see, I'm
no. You have to talk to him. I don't know what his due dates are.
Are you saying that? Are you saying that what's stopping you from giving some direction to program directors so they can help programmers submit things to the archives is Rob Robinson's timetable?
Yes, but I'm not saying that in any kind of negative way. There are a lot of things that have to be figured out here.
Mm-hmm.
That have to do with very complicated copyright and ownership issues.
Okay.
Yeah,
but in the meantime, Teresa, if somebody wants to send us the interview with whoever that they just did,
mm-hmm.
the program directors or you can help counsel to say send it in CD format with notes to the archives and it'll be here.
Yes.
We can't promise anything beyond that. But it'll be here.
But, and the other thing is, if you know, like, for instance, if you were saying that, you know, there's something that you know about that you think should go to the archives and you think you know who else might be interested in it, send it.
Mm-hmm.
And it will happen. You don't have to wait for a policy.
My question was, I would like to know how each of the sister stations are submitting items to the archives. How many items from each does the archives receive every month, and in what format? Is there a written procedure fitting the current technology to ensure that the submissions are pre-cataloged and formatted properly to minimize the work required from the archive staff and to minimize the time by which they can be utilized efficiently? So you're saying the format is just regular CDs?
Right, that's the only that is the tangible format for digital production.
So let's say I have this interview of Charlie Clements, and so the notes would include statements like, this is an interview of Charlie Clements in...
When it was recorded, where it was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Who
did the interview, and then some key words like, you know, he mentions Cambodia, he mentions...
You can do a verbal description. It's better to do a description.
But, like, if I were to use this like a card catalog, I would want some keywords of topics that were discussed.
Do a description. Do an actual description, and then if you want to add keywords, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But don't just go to keywords and then expect other people to be able to reconstruct a description.
Mm-hmm. Like, and
don't withhold information is what I'm saying.
We don't have anything, am I correct in saying we don't have anything right now for programmers to get the person they're interviewing to sign saying,
in doing this interview, you're allowing this interview to be not only aired on our station, but also used by our archives.
Brian, do we
have it.
Can we say oi?
Since 1999,
we've tried
I've been sending out this, what is called the Pacifica Speaker release. It was updated to include digital formats and web production by John Krigler in 1999.
Do we have a copy of that on the website?
No, we don't have one, but it's been sent to, it's been included with the National Board Report. It's been sent to the GMs.
There was a directive for it to be displayed in every studio.
Right.
How many times, people.
Years. It happens over and over again.
Four times a year, every year.
The National Program Coordinator for National Specials, when they went to the Media Reform Conference, I was the one that made sure that people, when they were putting the production together and the GMs were on the phone call to say this is what we're doing, I was the one that said you have to have a speaker release if you want to produce a premium out of it. And everybody said, what are you talking about?
But this is a good idea. You know, remember our speaker releases? We tell you about every 10 minutes. But Brian, this is a good idea. Why don't we put in our technical reports?
Okay.
Why don't we post up there on our technical reports? So when you look at the Pacifica Radio website and you look at the grant stuff, the preservation, you look at the grants, you look at the technical reports. So we'll all know this, right, people? You know, our team. So then we'll have in there, we'll say this is our release. And then if you personally have a reason, you know, to use it, and your program director never heard of it, and nobody ever heard of it, and it's not posted where it's supposed to be posted, you can download one and use it.
Well, it seems like this should be part of the evaluation form by our program directors of the programmers, especially people that do public affairs.
Great idea.
But even for music people that do interviews
and live performance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Now, I don't mean to put a kerfuffle in it. However, I believe that the license and distribution team would rather have a Creative Commons license signed instead of a Pacifica speaker release signature.
And I believe that they're still fussing over what language that should have. So here's a good idea, Brian. Why don't we make a technical report that's got every damn release form anyone's ever come up with?
Okie doke.
You know what I mean?
Wait a minute.
And then just you guys can download whatever you want. And believe us, there'll be a final thing sometime.
But couldn't you just say, until we get a different speaker release from Creative Commons, from the collaboration between...
I don't think we should do that. I'm sorry. That's asking us to go into policy issues. We shouldn't. I think we should merely make available a bunch of stuff, and then you could make your own decision.
Well...
as to which thing you want to use.
It is the official Pacifica release. It's the one that John Krigler wrote. It was approved by Pacifica.
Right.
It might have been 2000 instead of 99.
I'm saying you're confusing me, Addie, by saying, we're going to send everything. I'm just saying, just send the one that Krigler,
we'll post. We're not going to send anything. We're going to post the one that Krigler approved. Oh, my God, thank you. We're going to post the one that Krigler approved.
Which you send routinely to the program directors and say, have your people sign them.
They get them all the time. They're everywhere. They get directives to do everything with them. It just never happens.
Well, our program council is working on evaluations and also making sure that our programmers have proper training material and then know that they will be evaluated.
Okay, that's where we get in trouble. We get in trouble where we're trying to... Brian, am I right? We foresee trouble if we're sending something that we think is official. because they're going to working on the Creative Commons thing.
Oh,
is that what you were saying?
Yeah. There is a conflict because what we say is the official speak release is not the direction that the license and the distribution has been doing by trying to create a Creative Commons license that doesn't say that Pacifica owns the materials. So it is sort of like putting out a policy before a new policy is written. So
yes,
it does sort of like step on toes.
Are you saying
even though the speaker release has been out there for years?
Right.
Are you saying we don't have a policy now?
No, we do have a policy now. It's just that me and Brian are the only people who know it.
Well, actually, that is not exactly correct.
Oh, good.
I believe that the that Rob Robinson's work will have to come before the Pacifica National Board to actually create.
Yeah, they're working on it.
I know they're working on it. You've made that perfectly. No, let me just say, I know you've made that perfectly clear. I happen to know they're working on it.
Right.
That's not an issue. I know they're working on it. My point is that until a new policy is created by that work, by the Pacifica National Board, it seems to me that the old forms, which were approved previously, would still be in effect. But I think it should be clear that they will probably be superseded at a certain point. But I don't think we don't have that policy in any position right now.
Is that right?
I'll say this again. I hope you can appreciate that I'm a little bit distressed because I'm talking to programmers that don't know how to send things to the archives, and some of them have just learned how to. That they need to make tapes. We hold things in our archives for, I think, 2 months, and then after that, they, like, disappear.
That's an emergency.
So Teresa, Brian DeShazer was at KPFT maybe 2 years ago with John Krigler at a mandatory programmers meeting where I sat before 50 KPFT programmers and talked for 45 minutes about how do you send materials to the archive. Mm-hmm. I left without anybody had any further questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm further distressed that people don't know how to burn a CD, put it in, and you use USPS, and just, you know, if you don't know, think of something by putting it in the mail and sending it to the archive. You know, they're right now in the foundation, there is going to be no systematic way to tell them how to do it until the foundation gets more stability.
Okay.
Without an executive director, without an HR person, without a national development director, without all of those things, the system really is not a system. So I would suggest, you know, have them call the archives. We're here 9 to 5. Everybody in the archive staff will be able to advise anybody on how to get their programs here to the archives and taken care of.
And everybody wants to help. You know, we'll just improvise. We've been improvising for a few years, and we'll continue.
Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send a letter to my program director and tell him what you just said.
Okie doke.
Okay.
Excellent.
So. And I'm assuming that at this point that programmers know to get the speaker releases until informed otherwise.
Great.
I think they need the releases anyway.
So who gets the speaker releases? Do they stay there at the station or do they come to the archives?
They come to the archives with the material. Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is, they'll need a speaker release anyway, whether it's Creative Commons has to do with the producer's rights, not the... It's a different level than the... We still need a release from the speaker.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does anybody else have any other questions? Okay. Hearing none, I don't know that there's anything else on the agenda. Is there anything else on the agenda?
Was that helpful?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yes, that was hopeful.
Good.
And I would hope that other people on this call do the same thing.
If there's anyone left on the call,
I'm still here. Still here.
Oh, good.
I'm here.
Oh, great.
Is there anyone here that is representing WBAI?
I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can you send a similar letter to your program director? Or would you like me to draft it and send it to you? So what I'm sending my program director?
That would work.
Okay.
Because I get around. We're in the middle of Thundra, so I go in kind of often.
Okay. And we don't have anyone from PFW here, right? Okay. Well, I will see if I can send this to someone at W, and I'm assuming that the other two stations know what to do.
Well, listen, can you send me a copy of that letter?
I will.
You have my email address. I'd like to look at it. And
I might just send it out.
It would be great
if you send it out to the whole committee.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. That would be great.
I think that would be great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
If there are no objections, the meeting's adjourned, and it is 9:51. Is that correct, Eastern Standard Time?
No, it's only 11.
It's 10:51 Eastern
mm-hmm.
Standard Time. All right, my clock's off. So thank you, Mr. Secretary, if you'll put that in the minutes.
I'll call it. Yeah, that's right. It's 9:11. It's 7:51 here in Los Angeles. Okay, I'll definitely
10:51 Eastern Standard Time. Thank you.
That's right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.